I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, and we are now back for episode 128 of Digital Divination.
That's right, Digital 128. That's a good milestone. I think it's a big old factor of twos and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. It is. And speaking of factors and big milestones.
Oh, I don't know if it's a milestone. I am still an employee of Wizards of the Coast. And the opinions I express here are mine and not theirs.
I think that's a milestone. So speaking of milestones, I've been trying to calculate when we hit 5 years worth of these.
Okay.
So there's 26 in a year.
Yeah.
Okay. So 26, so 52. By five. Right. So that means 104 is 4 years. 26 plus 104 is 130. So we are two episodes away from having done this for 5 years. Without a break, we've not missed an episode.
Wait, so but far weren't we weekly for a little while? Was that not?
Not this one. This one was always biweekly. Yeah. The our Intrepid Heroes was weekly when we first started before we came to the network. Then Ryan said, no, that's too much. Slow down.
Or you're playing too much games.
Yes.
And we said, well, I was right. It's playing, two to the seventh power is 128. It is a power of two. I knew that.
Ah, there you go. So it's seventh power. So anyway, so we're getting there towards a, you would not think
anniversary.
That 130 was a massive milestone, but it's a 5 year milestone the way we're going.
I mean, you'd definitely be syndicated by now.
Right.
Well, I would hope so, and then we get residuals and stuff, but nobody's even paying us for the first go-around, so I don't know.
What? We're not getting paid for this? Hold on, I'm out of here.
Yes. So.
Checks in the mail, Jason.
Exactly.
Checks in the mail.
Or wait, cred sticks. Do we say cred sticks in the mail?
Cred sticks.
Oh. I mean, I want to keep things in a Starfinder focus, right?
Course, sure.
Cred sticks in the mail, Jason.
So, hey,
all right.
How many?
Now I can't make my Chex Mix.
How many credits to a gold piece?
Wait,
it's 10.
Yeah.
That means a credit is a platinum then, right?
What? No, wait.
No, a credit is a silver piece.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I got the reverse.
Because silver piece is the base currency in Pathfinder Second Edition.
I thought that was interesting. That was intended. I didn't know that. I'm thinking, how do I, how would you price things if you're doing stuff, making the conversion? It's 10 to 1. Oh, that makes it easy.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty simple.
Yeah. Now I got to figure that out. All right. So I was thinking, we've been talking a lot about Starfinder Second Edition things. The last time we talked about making monsters. We talked about something before that. I didn't know what it was. It's been so long.
We made our turkey monster at Thanksgiving. I remember that.
Well, that was a while back.
It was memorable for me, okay?
It was, yes. I was thinking we could talk about adventure making, but in particular, kind of building encounters in the nature of the type of encounters you would put in a Starfinder Second Edition adventure, regardless of, if it's short or long, kind of how would you want to build and pace things. And I think there's a couple important parts to that. One of them is, you have various challenge ratings, I guess you would call them, right? CRs?
No.
Four.
Not anymore. No?
Oh, what are
they? No, they're just...
They're levels.
They're level. Everything's level, basically.
Everything's
level. A creature has a level, and you have an encounter budget and difficulty.
Yes.
For XP. Okay.
Right. Yes. Okay, now I got it. Yeah, so you have a certain amount of... based on how many players that you have expected amount of XP that they would get... based on the difficulty of the encounter, and these can go from trivial to
Extreme. Which you have to say, like, there's a whole bunch of extra E's in there. Yeah.
Extreme. You can vary these within. And you do this by calculating XP, which I think is really wild for doing it, but it makes sense.
There's different, yeah, you can put a bunch of monsters into an encounter, figure out what the XP is, and then label the encounter as extreme or severe or whatever. Or you can go the other way around and say, I need to make this a moderate encounter. I need
so 80 I have
XP.
A budget of this much, right?
Right. And then you pick monsters that equal that, you know, that cost that amount.
Oh, well, which is the right way to do it?
It depends on what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, there's no right way. It depends on what you're doing.
Okay. Well,
yeah, if your narrative piece is that you're chasing after this one particular villain and you need to have a fight with the one particular villain and some henchmen, I mean, it kind of, you having that villain and the henchmen is going to produce an XP number, and that's going to tell you how tough it is. And if you do that and it comes out as like low or moderate, well, then maybe you want more, yeah, I don't know, more henchmen or something. And if it comes out as extreme, maybe you want to push it off sort of narratively until the characters are a level or two higher. Okay. There are a lot of different options.
Yeah, right. No, yeah. Understood. And I guess for adventures, you know, if you're making an AP, AP's got three chapters, right?
Usually. Yeah. It depends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have an XP budget per chapter?
I mean, lately it's been a level per chapter. In second edition.
So enough XP to reach a level.
Or more. A little bit, you know, got to put a little more in there.
Yeah, you want a little bit more in case they miss stuff.
Right. So that's your budget.
And this is actually worth drilling down on a little bit more specifically. It's worth adding more because if you made sure that every encounter was necessary to hit the right amount of XP to level, well, then you've just built a railroad where it's just a fight, then a fight, then a fight, then a fight, then you level, right? Without any option. Your pacing is going to require decisions so that the players feel like they're, and it's going to require decisions that matter. So your players feel like they're making decisions that matter instead of just getting on a treadmill. And sometimes that means they're going to hit things or not hit things.
Yeah.
Jason, I don't disagree with that. Disagrees.
No, not that second part where I want to have important decisions. I want to like kind of ask about exactly your definition of a railroad is, because what if you've got a bunch of stuff that can happen non-linearly, but all of it needs to happen? Is that a railroad?
Oh, I see what you mean.
You've got to go to points A, B, C, and D. You can go to them in any order, but you have to do all of them, and that will get
you. Yeah, like you've got to collect all the pieces of a broken, you know, rune or some technological item that it just plain doesn't work unless all the pieces of this technological item are gathered. Yeah, that would require that you hit all of those things in order to put it back together. But even then,
it's railroad-ish, but it's not necessarily as railroad as a railroad. Right?
I think that's right.
It's not a straight line. It's a point A and a point B with a bit of spaghetti in between.
Yep. And I do think that I want to make sure to clarify that even if the players are sort of inventive about how they bypass a thing, they should get all the XP for it anyway, right? If they talk their way out of an encounter, they should get all the XP as though they fought their way through the encounter. Sometimes maybe even a little bit more, depending on what kind of, you know, behavior you want to be encouraging. But so, I mean, if they just miss something, if they choose not to, we could go through, we could either duck through this asteroid field or go all the way around it. We know there's pirates in the asteroid field. We're just going to go around. Well, then they don't get any XP for missing the pirates or for fighting the pirates, right? They haven't done anything to bypass. Yeah. That's very different than, we want to disguise our ship as a pirate ship and then do some fancy computer stuff in order so that our ping looks like it's one of the pirates. And that way we don't have to get into a fight with them as we go through. That's the kind of thing that would give you XP as though you had defeated the space pirates. But just going around, I think your adventure needs to carry the fact that you might not go right into a thing if the players are, no, I don't choose to do that. I choose to get to our goal some different way.
To go to that point, sort of something that would be slightly better, you know, kind of adventure writing is that you can go through the asteroid field, which is dangerous because it's asteroids and maybe it's got some other sort of stuff zipping around there, or you can go around it, but you might get attacked by pirates if you go around it because they're known. That's, you know, if they're separate and then you have a choice between A and B, and they end up being And choices depending on what kind of thing you want to do. I don't mind. I just want to do flying. I don't want to necessarily want to fight. You might go to the asteroid field, and that becomes.
I see. So then it becomes kind of a choice of unknown dangers, which you as GM know are asteroid worms, or space pirates. And either way, that is, you've already considered it to be maybe a moderate encounter or a slight string of encounters or whatever. They're going to get to one of those either way. But they'd have to do something particularly unusual to do both, right? We're going to go part way through the asteroids, fight all the worms, then back out and go all the way around. And I've had parties do that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. But they could try to get double XP by going through the asteroid field and then luring the pirates into areas where they know the big dangerous asteroid worms are and then spinning off, though, right?
If it comes with any kind of risk, then it's you get XP for it. That's kind of basically how I feel. Like if they want to do something that's that dangerous, sure, give them both of them. If they just want to like quote unquote XP farm your adventure and do the asteroid field, then turn around and then do the pirates and then turn back around. You go, oh, the pirates are gone. You don't get attacked by the pirates. Let's move on to the next step of the adventure, please. Let's not dwell on every. Stick your finger in the choose your own adventure book and then go back and get the other stuff.
So they can't just keep killing 10 rats to get the XP.
Yeah, exactly. I got to do something different.
Okay. All right. So, you know, this kind of, you both mentioned railroads, and I'm presuming that you're implying a railroad, a linear process that the PCs have to go through stepwise to gain XP is not as good as if the PCs have choice is into the direction they go to gain the XP.
It's more interesting for sure, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'd necessarily call it pejorative because you can have sort of gauntlet type adventures like that where the players know going into it. They're like, oh, you want to get to the, you need to get to the other side of the space station. You know, it is, you know, it's been holed and filled with necromantic energy, and man, there's going to be just strings of undead, and the prior people had put up a bunch of traps and robots and stuff, and you've got to get from one end of the space station to another, and kind of get everybody to buy into the railroad, right? Buy into the, it is going to be a gauntlet of difficult fights. That can be fun. It's not necessarily pejorative to say it's a railroad. I think that a lot of people, I mean, I probably default to using it pejoratively.
Yeah.
But
people talk about all the time being railroaded into having to do a certain thing in a certain order, and they don't like that. I mean, I have players talk about that when they hear something in, you know, an adventure.
Yeah, what they're saying is, I felt like I didn't have the amount of choice that I wanted.
Right.
That's when they say, this was a railroad. What they're saying is, I didn't feel like I had the amount of choice that I expected to be able to exercise.
I want to throw a spike under this railroad discussion. That was a bad analogy.
A golden spike?
Well, no, because when I'm just
putting a penny on that track. That's all.
Put a penny on the track. I'm putting a little penny on the track, which might derail it. Because I want to talk about the logistics of publishing, and that is that Adventure Pass are often considered railroads, or at least some people like to call them. I, me included, like to call them theme park rides, which you are. Go on a railroad, but maybe you're enjoying yourself more than you would if you would just get sort of shunted along, right? Because you get to see cool things. Anyway, it's you want to try to make it as player choice focused as possible, but then you've got the problem is you've only got so many words and pages to fit things in. So you cannot necessarily spend too much space on do we go through the asteroid field or do we go through the pirates or do we do the third thing or do we do a fourth thing or do we do a fifth thing? And all those things lead to the same point eventually. That's, you know, you have to, there becomes a point as an author where you have to like decide how much space you're going to give to something that a GM might not ever use.
And along those lines, speaking of GMs, if you don't have a kind of predetermined track as you want an order for things, and it's just a big sandbox. I'm running Fist of the Ruby Phoenix, and the first book in that is a sandbox where the players can go anywhere and do anything. And as a GM, that's a lot of prep work and a lot of stuff to have ready to go because I don't know in advance what the players are going to do. Now, we're playing in another game with a different Jason, and he kind of makes us tell him what we want to do next session so he can prepare for the thing that we want to do. So
Yeah, which means that we can't have spent the 2 weeks in between or the week in between and go, you know what? We thought about it and we don't want to do that thing we said. Yeah. We decided we want to do some different thing. I mean, we could, but it'd be mean.
Well, mean. And also, what are you going to do when you get to the session that night and you know, well, I guess we're going to do something different. Okay, well, then the session's over because I don't have anything prepared for that. Goodbye. No. You know, yeah. Like, you know, there's practicalities. I mean, whether or not you're running a pre-written adventure that has all that in there or you're doing your own sandbox of your own, you know, preparing a sandbox is always going to be more difficult.
Right, yeah. Right. But getting back to encounters for adventures and you were just talking about kind of the linear approach or whatever about them. So say, let's look at an adventure path and we're looking at one chapter. Okay, and okay. I haven't sat down, so we already know what level
it's for because each chapter, yes. as we were saying, is one level. Yes. So we already have that in mind.
We have an XP budget for the chapter.
Mm-hmm. That's
we know it. We know it's going to be right.
We know it is exactly 1,000.
Yes,
I mean because so one level is 1,000 XP.
Yeah,
and we want to do a little bit more because we were talking about that. So maybe we want to go 1,100, 1,200, something like that.
Right. So we know that that's the budget for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How do you divvy up the budget then?
I mean, I start by looking at what big encounters I want to have. Sort of maybe even like opening encounters I want to have. If you're talking about this is the first chapter of the AP and it's first level, you want to have those first couple encounters maybe be a little gentle or teach a little something about the world or whatever. Start there. Start at either end, I would say. Start at both ends simultaneously. Kind of like set those aside. I need that for that. And then you add a couple more. And then if you're anything like me, you realize you've gotten maybe like 500 XP and then you have to go, oh no, I have to fill out a 500 more, 600 more XP. What do I add? How do I make this one tougher? Do I make this one tougher? Do I add three more adventure encounters in this area or what? Throw in some story points, story award. Yes, story award XP. That kind of stuff.
Okay.
See, and I might do a little more mechanically in that I might think to myself, okay, in this chapter, the primary antagonists, what are the primary antagonists here? And if the primary antagonists are kind of circling around the level of the characters, then I know I can't really put more than two of them at a time up against the characters because then the encounter quickly becomes sort of overwhelming. So now I'm going to divide up the encounters such that the enemies that I want to use sort of only come in, you know, ones and twos and maybe ones with some minor allies or something. If the key monsters that I want to use are lower level than the characters, then I know I can kind of mob them up. And maybe I think about how I want to mob them up. And if they're much higher level, I realize, oh, I have to have one at a time, maybe as kind of a boss fight. And that's all I can do. Mm-hmm. It's helpful if you can get kind of themed families of monsters together, undead kind of theme together a lot. You can have some lower level ones and ones what lower level than your characters, same level, you know, maybe, you know, a boss that's a little bit higher, robots, demons, stuff like that kind of become sort of families that you can use different members of. And then I'll think, okay, well, how do I juggle all those numbers kind of specifically? One of the strictly mechanical things I did, and I don't know that this is a great idea, but it's what I did, and I did it 20 times for the adventure path I wrote and then kickstarted in the Scaldwood Blight, right? For Scaldwood every Blight. Level.
I got it back here somewhere.
You have that over here. Excellent.
Yeah.
For every level, I'm like, I need exactly 1,000 experience. I know that a moderate encounter is worth 80 experience and a severe encounter is worth 120. So every chapter of that has exactly, and I think I only deviate from this once or twice of all 20 levels, it has exactly 10 moderate encounters and exactly 2 severe encounters. And then the sort of the encounter building juggling was, well, the severe encounter probably comes, one of the two severe encounters probably comes at the end and the other one maybe kind of comes in the middle as sort of a, you know, mid-boss break. And then I will very specifically and intentionally figure out, okay, what makes a moderate encounter at this level and what kind of monsters can I use? And, you know, what's my severe? Then the rest of my moderates, what's my severe? And so on. And that was very mechanically done so that there was exactly 1,040 XP level. A lot of those ended up being as just very railroady because you had to hit the numbers. But if you were going to be a little more nuanced about that, you would sort of build out your, okay, well, I want, you know, they could, if they go this way, they get a moderate encounter. Maybe there's a couple of low encounters over here instead that are only 60 XP each, right? Or if they do this thing, then the reward is that they get a trivial encounter that's only worth 40 XP or something like that. And you kind of plot out how you're going to expend the one, exactly one level's worth of XP that you want to have. Anyway, and that, and then there's, I still think there's a lot of creative freedom to build within there, right? You're like, oh, it's important because they're invading a, I don't know, like a, you know, Shobads. Those are the four-armed Martian guys.
Right.
They're invading a Shobad complex. So of course there's going to be, Shobads in there, and maybe some of the animals, Ecton animals they've got with them. And how do I mix that up in order to have, the animal pen that's just animals and animal trainers doing stuff. And there's a bunch of hunters that are out sort of shooting at stuff with their awesome rifles or whatever. And then sort of before long, I usually have more encounters that match the theme that I kind of know what to do with. And then I figure, okay, what's going to make the best story and what's going to work the most? And then I start crafting the story part of it. That was a very long way of saying how I can and have done it very methodically and mechanically.
One thing you want to do is have mostly moderate encounters throughout. Yeah. The majority of your encounters should be moderate. You take sort of what Ron was saying, maybe instead of saying 10 moderates and 2 severes, maybe it's... because I also think you should have low and trivial encounters in there just to sort of mix things up, and then maybe take 8 moderates, 2 severes, and then however many it would be to get a couple, the rest in
low. Yeah, fill up the rest trivial, with lows. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then make sure you don't put the 2. I mean, there's some sort of under the hood advice that I've learned, frankly, the hard way, doing some design for Pathfinder 2nd Edition and doing some development for Pathfinder 2nd Edition. You don't want to put the 2 severe encounters back to back if you can avoid it. Players being players, maybe they'll trigger one and then do some weird thing and then trigger the other, but that's on them. But you don't want to make them intentionally back to back. And you don't want to make your severe encounter a solo fight, because a single creature 3 levels higher than the party is a severe encounter by itself. But the way the numbers work is that its AC is so high that characters have a frustrating time hitting. They make their saves so often against the DCs the character set that the spells and grenades and stuff don't feel like they're connecting. It just ends up being really frustrating. They crit the players really easy. So definitely something with that spreads out a little bit.
I've come to sort of think more too that like any encounter with just one monster is not good enough. And needs to be a little more spicy than that. It's one encounter and one creature and one hazard kind of going on, and that's sort of been my I would say it's my default these days. Within the past year essentially is something that I've come to. And at best I could do one creature and maybe a couple little extra miniony creatures that go along with it, and that's fine. If they knock out the minions right away, then it's one, then it becomes one party against one thing. And granted, because action economy wise one creature is going to be at a disadvantage against the party, but when we to do one creature against and have it be a moderate, even a modern encounter, it has to be higher level than the players. Mm-hmm. And that can get, like what Ron said, can get frustrated, even if it is something that is meant to be kind of within the realm of possibility, like 1 or 2 level. 1 level I think is okay. 2 levels is getting, even 2 levels more than what the party is getting a little dicey, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to look something up right now, so don't mind me.
Yeah, no. I think that's a fair point. Now, one of the things that you come up with, and this is what I've been thinking about building encounters, is that if you do have one large creature and a couple of smaller ones with it, then when you make a party level adjustment, so if you're designing it for a party of 6 and then it only 4 people show up, well, it's a little bit easier to just knock out a couple, 1 or 2 of the low level creatures, to scale. Then you got to put some conditions on the single solo high level creature instead, which makes it a little bit clunkier and stuff. So.
Yeah, and that's not impossible. I mean, that's what the weak and elite adjustments are sort of good for.
Yeah.
But you've got a good point there, and you can go the other way too if you designed it for, however many players you have. I got the the Strength of Thousands game I'm in, we have, technically we have seven players, but they don't always show up. And so I kind of, the fact that the adventure is written for a party of four, that's the assumption, is something that I kind of count on. If I've got four, maybe five people there, if six people are showing up, or, you know, oh, heaven forfend all seven of them, then it's easier for me. Like you say, I like the encounters where I can easily just sort of, oh, instead of, you know, two minions, there's four here that are, you know, joining the boss.
just to sort of do a little bit of a small plug here, that when I'm running stuff through Foundry, it's literally a click of a button for me to take a stat block and just make it elite or weak, which is
just easy as that.
Super easy as heck. Right. Yeah. And so I'm like, I just need this guy to be weak because, you know, we're short one player. I'll just loop that and, you know, run the encounter as written otherwise. Or, you know, obviously it can take like easy. It's super easy not to put monsters into the encounter. Right. I have a sort of slightly different topic. Not topic, completely topic, but another question in
that's
this
okay.
topic.
We always have these segues.
A different framing.
No. It's actually a related question. I don't know if we're are we good. John, what do you think? Does anyone have anything else to say about like specifically picking out encounter, like budgeting them?
No. I think we're good. I think that's fine.
This is related. I think the next step, because Ron, some of the things you were talking about, like, you know, creatures in a family and how many creatures. I want to get everyone's opinion on, like, say you've got something that's like, it doesn't have a family of stuff with it. I'm going to say Akata, even though they have void zombies. But like, let's say Akata.
I was just thinking Akata, right? Go ahead. Akatas don't have like this example.
Akatas don't have greater Akatas and lesser Akatas. You know what I mean? They don't have they have the void zombies, which can help to spice things up. Right. But if you're designing an adventure, or even as a part of an adventure that would have these Akatas in them, how many Akatas? Is it woodchuck chuck? No. How many Akatas would you use in that adventure before it would be start to maybe get a little samey for the players to fight Akatas over and over and over again, right? Like if we fight two Akatas maybe at once, and that's a tough encounter, and then maybe before that we fight one. So we fought three total. Was the fourth one, we fight another one? Is that going to be like, oh, here comes another Akata?
Well,
like the, you know, fifth one, sixth one.
Practical
what's the
experience,
limit?
I mm-hmm. will say that four is the limit.
Okay.
No,
not necessarily one. Yeah.
So when we did the Dead Sons, I think there's four Akata in there.
They might, yeah. They
right.
Might be. I don't really. And
is it in the same fight or in different fights?
They're no, in all in that same the same in the vessel, and I don't know if. You remember we fought one and we had such a hard time with it, and then
I did not join the Dead Sons.
Oh,
group
you
until
came
after
late. You came after
all the
that.
Akatas there were to fight. I have never fought an Akata in Starfighter.
Oh man, it was we had such a hard time with them, and then there were more, and then we knew there were a couple others lurking around, and we like spent all this time trying to figure out how are we going to deal with them, and it we tried to figure out how to make salt water, all kinds of crazy stuff, and. Oh yeah, four is my limit. Then on a Akatas.
Four. Let me answer.
It's three encounters, and I don't care what the number of creatures is. Maybe you're fighting three or four at a time, but three, maybe four encounters. Because the first time the players encounter them, they don't quite know what they're getting for them. By the end of the encounter, they've figured, salt water affects them. Right? We're talking about Akatas, or let's use our electricity against them because of robots or whatever. They've figured that out by the end of the first time they fought them. The second time they fight that kind of monster, they put what they know into practice and they feel good and smart about it. Maybe even a third encounter with those creatures is enough. If the third encounter kind of mixes it up, maybe they've got a different type of creature with them. Maybe that's the time they've got void zombies with them or something like that.
Yeah.
Because they feel like, okay, we're kind of done, right? And then to use a single monster in any more than three encounters, it has to be either really different or much later. Because if they end up fighting Akatas two levels later, they'll feel great. They're like, these are easy now. Man, we know how to, they're comparatively were much tougher than when we fought them the first time. And we know how, and we remember how to defeat them. Go us, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think that's good. What's your thinking on that, Jason?
And now I pretty much agree with Ron on this. Like three is probably I would say three is the limit. And whether or not it changes, like but per space, like you're on a spaceship, you have three Ikata encounters. That's plenty. That should be plenty. Mm-hmm. Whether or not, like, maybe not even another, not even necessarily at a later level, but maybe the next level you fight some more in a different place. Maybe that's okay. Because you know, it's a little different. Like Ron said, you're a little tougher, but maybe even if it's the same level and you're in a different place, I think that's on the borderline, right? Maybe if it was only two over here, you could have the third one in a kind of a different spot entirely. And maybe it is indeed, you know, the environment's different. This one's in zero G, and that's going to make it a little bit of a different fun. So yeah, it does depend a little bit on the situations that you're putting these things in. But I think, after three, you're really got diminishing returns.
What's interesting
about the creature?
What if it's within the family of creatures?
That's different entirely.
Go like, nuts. Lots more.
Orcs. Okay. Orcs, for instance, right? Orcs can have stat blocks of all types, right? Because they're just people, and they can have, you know, you said as show bads, like what like Ron was talking about, hunt masters and cooks and you know, magicians and stuff like that, right? Like techno wizards. They can all be there doing different things, so they're different, and they may have a similar weakness or strength that the PCs can find out about, and that's fine, but they will also have their each individual things, because like an Ikata stat block is going to kind of be the same unless you make a mega Ikata, and that's a
you're creating a family out of a single block then, and then the family rules apply. Although I do want to point out that player expectation really matters in this too, right? Because if the players are going into an adventure called Salvage Operation, where it's on a derelict spaceship and there are Ikata there, maybe the three encounter limit kind of applies. But if the adventure they're going into is called Lair of the Space Hounds, right, and they sort of expect a lot of Ikatas, you want to be able to deliver on that. In which case, encounters is probably...
Yeah, but that is exactly when I would be make some different ones, right?
Yeah.
Have the you know, alpha Ikata or what have you, be at the end, you know, or have them be a separate cast of Ikata that fight. Right. And then there's Ikata, even mega
little Ikata terriers that are running around
exactly. Because you make a family of it, so you can spice up the thing, and because it'll even if you are fighting a lot of, you know, if you're going to some place that is specifically about Ikata, you're kind of expecting them to kind of even be a little, get a little mixed up here and there, right? I think.
All right. So if you're going to a place that's just, you know, there's tons of Ikata, all kinds of different levels of maturity, right? So juveniles, adults, and things like that. And they're just kind of living their best life. Would you expect the murder hobo, the players to go murder hobo all of them all the time? Or do you expect them to?
I mean, that depends a lot on the adventure. If it were Ikatas, they're just sort of aggressive, unintelligent creatures. Robots, probably the same way. Look, you just steamroll over as many, fight a bunch of robots, nobody's going to care. Back to the orcs example, though, maybe we're going to try to disguise ourselves or talk our way around or try to convince some of the people that are there that the reason we've sort of come to the place would, you know, maybe you should help us out.
If the deal is, these Ikatas are terrorizing the local spaceport, you have to clear them out. Then, you have to clear all of them out. Or if there's something, Ikata stole a secret microchip and has, for whatever reason, and took it back to the lair, then finding the microchip is the thrust of the adventure. You go and you get it. And you don't necessarily have to fight everyone and kill all of them. Mm-hmm. Because maybe it's too, maybe there are just too many. Maybe you have to sneak your way through past a room, you know, around it that's like just chock full of Ikatas, and there would be no way that you'd be able to fight them all. Then you steal the microchip, and then it becomes a chase scene to leave.
Okay. So now a kind of related question to this. So, you know, again, if we're looking at APs and you have three different chapters, so each AP book is going to have usually a sub boss, and the final AP has a big boss. Does each chapter have a little boss in it?
And it depends on what the chapter wants to do, right? If it's a chapter just about, like...
Get the microchip from the Ikata lair. Maybe that doesn't have, like, a big Ikata alpha boss.
Or it's just sort of like, you need to, you know, you're here, you're set down on this planet, you kind of explore a little bit, and it becomes, you know, it's exploration, and it becomes a sort of thing. As long as you find the temple, right? But you need to do all this, and that, and a bunch of little encounters. And the temple is the next chapter, right? Going through the hidden temple in the jungle, it becomes a whole chapter unto itself, and that has might have a boss in it or whatever. But the exploring the wilderness chapter might just be exploring the wilderness.
Now, I do have to say that having a sort of mini sub boss makes you feel like you're done if you're a player, right? We have just fought the toughest thing around. Now we feel like we're done. And they even sort of expect, like, after that point, they might not, their expectation is sometimes like, look, we're done. We expect everybody else that's here that might threaten us to run away or whatever. Right. Because we've done, we've defeated the leader, the boss, the, you know, whatever it is that's going on. So there's really kind of an expectation from the player's perspective of conclusion once you've done that. Not to an entire chapter necessarily, but to whatever task you're in. One chapter of an AP that spans one level, it could be like, oh, you've got to go take care of these three pirate hideouts, right? And one of them is in space, and one of them is on the planet, one of them is underwater, right? So they're all different, but each one probably has its own little mini boss in it. I actually had this conversation in a game I was running, I want to say it was the first chapter of Season of Ghosts, where they were having a real struggle of a fight against somebody. And so one of the players was like, this has a real kind of boss sort of feel to it. I think that we'll probably level up after defeating this boss. And I had to, you know, kind of break character. I'm like, oh no, this isn't even the final boss of this chapter or this little dungeon, much less the chapter. So, anyway,
speaking of the cicadas,
you're under attack by a space dog.
Oh my god.
All right. Well, I have one last question for y'all, and I really appreciate all your insights and humoring me on all this design stuff, Mark. I feel like I'm getting a masterclass here for free, and so this is great.
And so do all the listeners.
Yes. Hopefully.
Well, all the listeners have to send me $50.
Oh, yes, of course, not for free.
Not for
credit chips in the mail.
Does a chase scene does that give XP?
Sure.
Is there danger? I mean, can you fail? Is there risk to the players?
Yes. How do you budget? Yes. How's that budgeted?
It depends on how big and where it is in the event in the chapter or whatever in the adventure, right? It might be something very climactic, then you give them, you know, 40, 60, 80 even. Three X, you know, basically XP. If it's in the middle of the chapter, it may not be as, you know, because you're using game time to do something. There's danger, you're rolling dice, you should get some form of XP for it, right?
All right.
Yeah. I'll let me tell you the worst advice I ever got to answer that question. Decades ago. At Gen Con, we had some sort of, it wasn't a chase, but it was some sort of skill challenge we had to do to finish up an adventure. And because we'd been very clever through the adventure, we kind of short-circuited it. And all of us were feeling very good about it, except for one player at the table who felt like he'd been sort of cheated out of some risk. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? He says, I feel like every adventure, and every time you got a, you know, some sort of thing you have to overcome in the adventure, other than a fight, you ought to have to check strength and succeed, check your dexterity and succeed, and check your constitution and all six of them. And if you fail any one of those six, your character should die.
Whoa. Wait, that escalated.
That's what makes a good skill encounter scene for this fun guy. And I'm like, and I didn't say anything out loud because I'm polite, but I'm like, that might be the worst encounter design I've ever heard.
Yes. Okay. Never do this. Never do this. All right. Well,
Goofus and Gallant situation over here.
Yeah. Thanks again to both of you. This has been a very educational episode for me. I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.